From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I am your Friday host. It is Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Well, some of the top stories of this busy week in Washington: Democratic presidential frontrunner Joe Biden has caved under Democratic pressure to flip-flop on abortion yet again by reversing his support of the Hyde Amendment. Russian and U.S. Navy warships have nearly collided in the Philippine Sea. And a new Media Research Center study showed that 92% of the major network media coverage on President Trump last month was negative. But today, I will kick off the show with a discussion about the radical Amnesty for All Immigration Bill, H.R. 6, that House Democrats passed on Tuesday of this week. I'll talk with Republican Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina, who has a very different view than the Dems on immigration. In my second and third segments today, I'll feature an interview that our Tony Perkins pre-recorded yesterday evening with a Madison, Wisconsin parent who objected to Alice Elementary School administrators allowing a male science teacher, Vince Busenbark, to show a personal transgender coming out video to his elementary aged son and all the other K through 5 grade school students in the school on May 16th. As a mother and a native Wisconsinite, you can imagine my blood is boiling, and you will hear about it. And at 42 past the hour, you've heard about the Gallup poll that revealed that over 40% of Americans now embrace socialism. My guest in the final option today is Charlie Kirk, the 20-something founder of Turning Point USA, who says that the culture war involves the answer to this question: is America socialist or does it embrace freedom? As a reminder, you can find the podcast of today's program at tonyperkins.com. Go there also to participate in our baby hat campaign. We are halfway to sending our goal of 90,000 baby hats to Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. You can follow Tony on Twitter at tperkins or me at Sarah P. Perry. Well, a hot button issue that only continues to get hotter as the crisis at the southern border continues to escalate. On Tuesday of this week, the June 4th day of the week, the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives approved a radical immigration bill, H.R. 6, known as the American Dream and Promise Act. And despite its benign-sounding name, the vote was 237 to 187, with seven Republicans supporting the bill. And yet, some people are calling this a mass amnesty bill. When Democratic Representative Stephen Horsford of Nevada introduced it on March 12th, this is what he said as he was walking through the halls of Congress.
I'm coming to you from the U.S. Capitol, where I just became a primary co-sponsor of the Dream and Promise Act of 2019. As a son of an immigrant, this is a very important issue to me and so many of our constituents back home in Nevada's 4th District. People who have shared their stories about keeping their families together, whether it's Dreamers, TPS, or DED holders, we're going to do everything we can to pass this legislation, to keep our families together, and to make our immigration policies live up to our ideals and our values as Americans.
Well, you'd never guess by the comments of Representative Horsford and the commentary that sounds very nice about the American dream, and we understand that. However, the critics have countered that this is a mass amnesty bill, a stark contrast indeed with the Republican president who is currently talking to Mexico on negotiation trying to solve the border crisis. President Trump threatened to raise tariffs by 5% on all Mexican imports by this coming Monday the 10th. Unless Mexico does something to stem the tide of illegal immigration at the southern border. Joining me now to dig deeper is Republican Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina, who represents the 5th Congressional District. He serves on the Budget Committee, the Oversight and Reform Committee, and the Science, Space, and Technology Committee. Congressman Norman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Appreciate you having me.
Congressman, I would like to talk a little bit about what is in this radical immigration bill. Can you hit some of the highlights of H.R. 6?
Sure can. First of all, let me just tell you, it's not the Dream Act for America. It's the Nightmare Act. That's what it ought to be labeled. It allows 2.7 million more illegals into our country in addition to the 800,000 that are now in asylum under DACA. It will, if the gang database that the police now have, the FBI, this is disallowed under H.R. 6 to disallow people coming in if you're a member of a gang. It's a horror story. It really is. It's something that the country can't afford. We've had in May alone, 144,000 people, illegals were apprehended, which is double the previous month. And so what the Democrats have done is give incentives for people to try to come now, because they figure that if the wall's not going to get built, if the Democrats are continuing to stall that they'll just try to come now. And I guess the only bright line, you mentioned the vote of 187 to 237. 10 Democrats did side with us for the motion to recommit, which would have put it back in subcommittee and basically killed it, at least for a time being. But it's a tragedy. It really is. You're bored. Every American, every listener to this program ought to be boiling mad over this this takeover of our country.
And this is, in fact, the first time that Democrats have been willing to put forth legislation on the table without the give and take of additional funding for enforcement. So it is essentially a swinging wide of the door to citizenship without the ability to actually filter through and maintain the legality of our immigration laws in the first place. So what do you attribute the shift in this political strategy to?
I think the left has taken over their party. The AOCs, the Tlaibs, they've completely taken it over. And unfortunately, as I think the president rightfully has said, Nancy Pelosi is just scared of keeping her power. And so she's trying to vacillate to their side. But, you know, this is a open seat for anybody, anywhere to come into America, get on our welfare system. The last count that I heard that Americans would be on the hook for every illegal is $80,000. Do the math. It's something we can't afford. And on top of our $25 trillion debt now, it's something that's got to be stopped. Thank God for the Senate, and thank God for President Trump.
And is it not only your desire, but your anticipation that when this bill makes it to the Senate, that it will be stalled there, that it will fail to pass, and or will this become a talking point for presidential candidates understanding the nature of the crisis that we have on the southern border?
Oh, it'll be a talking point with the Democrats, because there, again, you saw the totals, 237 of them. And I think that's just what they believe. But it's along with the other dumb ideas that they put up, whether it's infanticide, whether it's, voting, letting illegals vote. I mean, you name it. It goes along with what the radical left is trying to promote. But this is so serious. I mean, this is a serious national crisis. And for those who criticize President Trump for putting the tariff on Mexico, I mean, thank God he's putting everything on the table. For them to put 6,000 National Guard troops, Mexican troops on the border, makes sense. But we just got to stop the inflow. We don't have the manpower, and I've been to the border. I've seen the agents that are doing what they can. Mass migration. It's worse now than it was. We went back in January. So everything's on the table, and I think it's a decision that I'm glad he made, and Mexico should take part in it. It affects them too, but not like us, because they're not wanting to stay in Mexico. They want to come to America.
Right. This is a pass-through nation on the way to their ultimate goal. I want to talk about some other notable provisions of the bill. And as I did some research on this bill prior to our talking today, I was absolutely blown away by the extent of this bill itself. Applicants can bring judicial challenges to the government if their application is denied. So now you have the possibility of tying up the administrative and the judicial system with applications that for some reason are denied, though those would be very few and far between. There is a de facto amnesty for gang members under Section 101 of the proposed bill, the authority to conduct secondary review section. The Secretary of Homeland Security can't delegate their authority to deny applications based on gang membership. And there's a limitation on removal. Section 206, aliens who meet the standard for relief can't be removed until they have gone through the administrative and judicial review process. So again, even if there is a limitation on citizenship, if the application for some reason, few and far between under this bill, might be denied, they do not become exported until there is an administrative and judicial review process. So not only is there not money allocated for enforcement of immigration and legal regulations on immigration and surging border numbers every month that are getting bigger every single month, but we also now have tied up the judicial system in review of applications that might be denied, if at all, in the first place. So is your desire right now to see the United States government do above and beyond what President Trump has done? What is, in your view, the solution to the immigration crisis?
Well, his hands have been tied because of who's in power. I mean, they've got the votes. And if as you've seen, he's pulling out all the stops with involving Mexico and letting them share some of the burden. And just what you just said, I mean, we can't afford the legal costs. And there is a provision in there that we pay their legal costs, along with $0 for any type of security. So that's how serious this thing is. And luckily, I think the president will, the 5% tariffs, if Mexico doesn't come to the table, they're going to be paying it. And I've had, you know, South Carolina is home for a lot of farm products that they need to ship to Mexico. But this is greater than any need that I've seen as far as stopping it now. And there is no in-between. All options should be on the table, including the Mexican government and including more enforcement from our military, because it's a national emergency.
Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina has been my guest today. You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, in for Tony Perkins. Well, coming up next, I have the incredible story of a Madison, Wisconsin elementary school where administrators allowed a male science teacher to show a personal transgender coming out video to a school assembly of K through fifth graders. The male teacher instructed the students to call him by a woman's name. You won't believe the audio of Tony's interview coming up next.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships. I am filling in for Tony today on this Friday. Well, yesterday evening, Tony pre-recorded an eye-opening interview with a Madison, Wisconsin parent who objected to Alice Elementary School administrators allowing one of their male science teachers, Vince Busenbark, to show a personal transgender coming out video to his son and all the K through fifth graders on May 16th. The male teacher also instructed the students to call him by a woman's name, Vika Steele, and an invented title of Mix instead of Mister. He also asked the students to call him by false plural pronouns of they, their, and them, since he identifies as gender non-binary, both male and female. Yes, you heard that right. Tony called the father Mr. A, since we are concerned that his son might be bullied if his identity is revealed. I'll play two segments in this B block. We will listen to the first segment. Let's listen in now.
Now, Mr. A, let me ask you this. When did you first hear about this disturbing transgender coming out video that your son, who was in first grade, saw? When did you hear about it? Were you told in advance, or how did you find out?
No, had no advance warning or information regarding that communication that came from the school to the kids. In fact, there's a parent-teacher application that we use for communication directly with his teacher in his grade, first grade, and I had picked up on that and just kind of skimmed it over. We get a lot of messages. So as I'm reading through, I'm seeing, you know, they got a fun run event coming up. There's a teacher coming out as transgender. There's a math assignment next week. And I thought to myself, well, wait a minute, what in the world did I just read? And of course, I read through it, and it wasn't a notification to parents that there was an individual that had made that decision at the school. It was a notification that they had created a video and sat down with K through five and already talked to kids about this teacher coming in. And there really wasn't any explanation as to what was discussed specifically. I had not seen the video at that point. At the same time, I had received an email along with other emails that come from the school that highlighted this. And again, it was an after the fact. We'd like to let you know that we spoke to your kids today about, you know, such and such. And so it was kind of a shocking thing that left me with a lot of questions immediately and quite disturbed.
Well, in the video, the teacher, Vince Busenbark, I believe is his name, he's a science teacher who claims to be transgendered and or non-binary, on his Facebook page, actually dressed as a woman. He stated the purpose of the video was so all the children can know who I am and whom I am becoming. That's a quote. Furthermore, he stated that people who respectfully disagree with him on the issue of transgenderism are motivated by fear and hate. Now, I understand he read a book to the children entitled They Call Me Mix. What was that about?
You know, it was when I watched part of the video and I've read through some transcript information and just kind of got down to what the message that was being said. You know, I'll equate it to this. It felt like they tried to Sesame Street up the message to the children by having a very docile format with a little children's book. And this individual, who, like you mentioned, is clearly trying to dress as a woman. I don't know if they have makeup on or what, you know. But it's very, very confusing to kids. And you know, of course, after I found out about this, and even prior to seeing the video, I had to sit down with my one son. I have another son who's was in the sixth grade this last year, not at the same school, but I wanted to make sure that both of them were grounded in what, you know, we believe. I have not, at this point in my son's life, my young guy, had to sit down and, you know, have the transgender talk. I honestly could never have imagined having had to do that. So, you know, to have watched the video, you know, I think one of my thoughts, in fact, it might have been in one of my social media posts, was something to the effect of, you know, we're talking about adult make-believe here.
Well, and it's as if in the video, the teacher poisoned the mind of the students, these first and second graders, third, fourth, and fifth, all the way through, that if someone opposes, if the parent talks about them in a way that says this is not good, it's because the parent has fear or hatred in his heart.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, as a Christian, you know, raising kids in a Christian environment and, you know, having watched my kids grow up and accept the Lord and really know truth, it's always been a concern of mine about, okay, well, I know that the public school is not teaching what, you know, the Bible teaches. I wouldn't expect them to. I know they're not going to, but I didn't know to what lengths that they would go. I mean, you talk about a six-year-old, I mean, even up to, you know, kids in their mid to late teens, they're very impressionable.
Right.
And again, the message that I've sent to all of my kids, I have four boys, he's the youngest, has always been, you respect your teachers. You do exactly what it is that they want you to say. They have your best interests in mind. Well, not now. And it's very difficult to, you know, explain that to a six-year-old, well, he's seven now, but, you know, as to, well, I know what Dad told you before, but there's an exception to that.
Coming up next on Washington Watch, we will have the second segment of the interview with Mr. A. If you aren't upset already, you will be after this next section. And let me tell you, as a mother, I am too. We'll be right back on Washington Watch. And let me tell you, as a native Wisconsinite, as a mother of three young children, one of whom who is in elementary school, at a public school nonetheless, if I were to find out afterward, and I have raised my children to come home and tell me the things that happen at school, particularly those of a nature that run contrary to what we believe as Christians and people who adhere to basic biology, I would be pretty upset, as this parent was. The fact that he has to remain anonymous says a great deal about the education in which our children are currently going to school. Washington Watch is coming up next with segment two of the interview with Mr. A.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Friday edition. Well, there was no notice given ahead of time. There was no content distributed. And in addition to a video, they were read the book, They Call Me Mix. These are 5-year-old through 11-year-olds, those of whom are too young to understand the nature of human sexuality, let alone have been given a talk about the birds and the bees. And so a science teacher at Alice Elementary in Madison, Wisconsin, an area known for its liberal politics, and having spent my first year of college at the University of Wisconsin, Madison, where Donna Shalala, who is the lesbian Secretary of Health and Human Services under Bill Clinton, was the chancellor. I understand full well the nature of left-wing politicking in medicine. They were given no notice. They were young. They do not know about natures of human sexuality. It is nothing more than basic hardline propaganda. These children were under no obligation, legal or otherwise, to call this individual by his preferred pronouns or his preferred name. And indeed, if this was something that this individual felt was important to him, it could be maintained in a private environment. A book, a video, and a school assembly were all inappropriate venues. I have 3 children, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a nearly 15-year-old. And if an individual in my family, one of my children, came to me and presented me with this opportunity, I hate to tell you, I would be making quite the stink. Well, the poor parent, Mr. A, who feels that he can't reveal his name because he is afraid about the consequences for his young child, spoke with Tony at greater depth. He talked to him a little bit more about some of the consequences and the feelings that he endured as a result of this particular consequence and the school assembly with his son. Let's listen in.
Now, you posted something on social media, on the Facebook page, really raising questions about this, and other parents responded.
They did. Other parents and other individuals right here in my own community in Madison, which is predominantly liberal. I'm born and raised in Madison, lived here all my life. I know it's liberal, but I know that there are people that agree with me. They may not agree with everything that I think, but you know, they at least, you know, they're taking a sane view of logic. And again, it's, you know, I received so many individuals that were commenting, you know, someone needs to bring this someone needs to file a suit against the school. Someone needs to file suit against, you know, the state. I mean, people were just kind of, you know, everybody becomes an attorney at some point. But
right.
I guess my thought was, okay, well, you know, maybe that's me, maybe that's not me, maybe that's a group of people, but I don't know where to begin. But all I know is that something like that needs to be stopped.
And then you, there are groups out there that legal groups like Liberty Council, First Liberty, ADF, and others who are defending parents. And so how do as other parents, I just want you to, for a moment, Mr. A, to speak to other parents out there that see these things and they're not sure what to do and how to respond. Silence is not the answer.
No, absolutely not. And again, they're not been anything that had been brought to my attention prior to this particular event that really raised me to a level of, I need to do something. I need to say something. I need to not sit back and be quiet and just let status quo take over. I would encourage parents that are out there that have strong feelings about this to, you know, band together, maybe find each other. I know that that might be difficult to do, but, you know, again, there are great organizations out there. You mentioned several of them that, you know, are a resource for those who don't feel like they have a voice on their own.
And this teacher, and, this teacher is now requiring the children to use, you know, different pronouns, call him Mix, as opposed to Mr., using these incorrect pronouns. And you do have Liberty Council, a Christian legal rights group, which is representing you. They say that the teacher has no authority to do that. In your view, how should the school be held accountable in this case?
Well, what's done is done at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've said this. They've done it the one time. I think what I would like to see happen at this point is for action to be taken, to be brought against the school or the school system, the district, so that this type of stuff doesn't happen again. And if that's a broad categorization of, you know, what that might entail, or if it's specific to, I think it's kind of hard to just, you know, put it into one small bucket of, you know, transgender. I mean, because there's so many different things. If we sat here on the phone forever, we, you know, talk about all the
Absolutely.
Kinds of different things that the public school is telling kids that really aren't true.
The bottom line is it's parental rights. It's the rights of the parents who are being violated by these policies and by these initiatives.
Well, correct. And it's my understanding that, you know, the children have, I mean, their First Amendment right is absolutely protected. And, you know, I don't think that they have to, I'm not an attorney myself, but I don't think that they have to adhere to someone's preferred pronoun. I don't want this to become so confusing, you know, for my kids, as this may or may not be the last time that they run into something like this.
Well,
I hope it is.
It only becomes the standard if parents are silent.
Correct. And we can't be silent about it.
Mr. A, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The real bigotry here seems to be a lack of concern for the rights of people who are being forced to use labels that don't make sense. Your belief does not compel my support. Coming up next on Washington Watch, Charlie Kirk of Turning Point.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins here on this Friday edition of our show. Well, you heard two very compelling clips and an interview with a parent who wishes to remain anonymous for the safety of his young son, who in grade school has been exposed to a mandatory school assembly in which a science teacher decided he would promote his own transgender non-binary identity by not only showing a video of a transgender coming out explanation, but also reading a book called Call Me Mix and instructing the students that he was changing and to call him Mix Steel. Mix is not an actual word. And to refer to him by the pronouns they, them, and their, even though he is only one person. So this individual conflated basic biology for children who don't understand what human sexuality even is. I find myself still upset at the notion that having been a Wisconsinite for 21 years and being a mother of three school-age children, this was not anything parents were informed about ahead of time. Those, I can imagine, who would have exercised an opting out right, but that right was not given. It seems that the information flow is only one way. A teacher's job, to quote my 10-year-old, is to teach about things, not to tell the wrong things. Direct quote from my son, who is 10. More than 4 in 10 Americans believe that socialism would be good for the country. Do you believe this? This is unbelievable. More than half disagree, according to a Gallup poll. But the numbers from the Victims of Communism Foundation are even more disturbing. And we've had Marion Smith from Victims of Communism on our show before. 43% of Americans believe that some sort of socialism would be good for the country, while 51% would be bad. Now, these are frighteningly close numbers. These results show an 18% rise in the number of people warming to socialism compared with a 1942 Roper and Fortune poll described by Gallup as one of the oldest trends questioning and measuring attitudes on socialism in the U.S. So 1942, 2019, more than an 18% increase in the favorability of socialism. It seems we have forgotten 100 years since the Bolshevik Revolution. Joining me now to talk about this trend is Charlie Kirk, founder of Turning Point USA, a national student movement dedicated to identifying, organizing, and empowering young people to promote the principles of free markets and limited government. Since the inception of Turning Point in 2012, Charlie Kirk has grown it from nothing to having representation now on over 1,200 high school and college campuses and over 150 full-time staff. He is only 24 and has appeared on Fox, CNBC, Fox Business over 600 times. He is a best-selling author, and he joins me now. Charlie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you about this because the fascination with the millennials, who are the largest generational cohort in America at present, I find not only fascinating but slightly terrifying. The fact that nearly 45% of these individuals find socialism to be a preferable economic and political system than capitalism absolutely blows the mind. So, let me ask you, why do you attribute the fact that pro-socialist sentiments have increased by 18% since 42?
Well, look, I'll tell you this. We have lost the culture war on college campuses, and as we have lost the culture war, these bad ideas are given a bigger and bigger platform. Whatever happens in college campuses will soon happen in the halls of Congress and corporate boardrooms. And so these ideas are seeping into the highest levels of influence imaginable. And the work we're doing at Turning Point USA is to educate the next generation around the values of free markets, limited government, American exceptionalism, the Constitution, which inherently, hopefully, will give people not a very good perception of socialism. It's very easy to be generous to other people's money. It's very easy to think that you're entitled to something that isn't yours. And the whole American ethic, the reason we're the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world, is that we have always rejected the ideas of victimology and of collectivism. And instead, we have embraced the ideas of the individual and entrepreneurship and the spirit of risk-taking. And I'm afraid we're at risk of losing that. And our educational institutions do not do a good job of teaching our history, and they do an even worse job of teaching economics and the values of free society. And that's where we come in at Turning Point USA. But it's very concerning and something that, you know, all your people listening to the show need to really take seriously, because socialism is unfortunately on the rise in this country. And here's the question I'll ask. Do you think America will be more or less socialist 10 years from now? And if we're honest with ourselves, on pace, it's going to be more socialist. That's the question every day. You have to ask yourself that question. And I think you would agree, oh my goodness, we're headed in the wrong direction.
Well, let me play a clip, speaking of the wrong direction, from what I'm sure is your favorite senator, Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who defines he means by democratic socialism. And then I want to get your take on it afterward.
When I talk about democratic socialism, you know what I'm talking about? Social Security. One of the most popular and important programs in this country, developed by FDR to give dignity and security to seniors. And it has been enormously successful in reducing poverty among seniors. When I talk about democratic socialism, I am talking about Medicare, a single-payer health care system for the elderly. And in my view, we should expand that concept to all people. I believe that everybody in this country should be entitled to health care as a right, and the most effective way to do it is through a Medicare for All single-payer program. When I talk about democratic socialism, I'm not looking at Venezuela. I'm not looking at Cuba. I'm looking at countries like Denmark and Sweden. And you know what goes on in those countries? All of the kids who have the ability and desire go to college. And you know how much it costs? It is free. They have childcare systems which are outstanding. They have public educational systems which are extremely strong. The retirement benefits for their elderly, much better than they are in the United States. Bottom line is, when I talk about democratic socialism, what I mean is moving away from where we are right now.
Well, Senator Sanders works very hard to avoid, to reject the notion of Venezuela and Cuba in favor of his comparisons to Denmark and Sweden. I'm very surprised, of course, because as anyone who has done a little bit of intellectually honest homework knows, Denmark itself, by the prime minister, has described itself as a free market economy. So why not Venezuela and Cuba? Does he not believe that these are legitimate risks for socialism?
Well, look, I mean, there's so much to unpack in that diatribe of nonsense. It's hard to do it in a short period of time. But I will start with this. I mean, look, Senator Sanders intentionally misrepresents what socialism is. You know, Social Security, first of all, people pay directly into Social Security, and they allegedly get back what they pay in with a little bit of return. And by the way, it's not like Social Security is the greatest return on your money, and the Social Security Trust Fund is going to be bankrupt in a couple of years. So I wouldn't actually even call that, the massive wild success as he advertises it. With that being said, if that is his definition of it, well, it's what people get what they pay for, right? So if you have higher earnings, you get a higher Social Security check. Isn't that an interesting concept? It's actually direct accountability. There's very little redistribution that happens with that. I mean, there's actually very little redistribution that happens with that. And so look, here's the thing, is that Senator Sanders knows better. He honeymooned in the Soviet Union. He went to the most horrific place one could imagine for pleasure and joy, and he saw the suffering, he saw the famine, he saw the catastrophe, he saw people in horrible, horrible conditions. But you know what he saw that he liked when he honeymooned in the Soviet Union? He saw how well the elites lived. He saw how much power those people had. He is a power-hungry exploitationist. He's a power-hungry exploitationist politician that wants to use nice-sounding innuendo and honestly, dialogue that has no facts, no historical perspective, to prey on people that don't know better, that want to change the world, that want to maybe create utopia on the backs of other people's freedom and money. And our country has achieved greatness and excellence because we've rejected self-serving politicians like Bernie Sanders, who's gone to the wrong left for 30 years, because we've had people that have been promising false things, and someone like Senator Sanders, who I like to call Bolshevik Bernie Sanders or breadline Bernie Sanders. It depends which name you like better. And breadline Bernie Sanders goes to the Soviet Union. Bolshevik Bernie Sanders also goes to the Soviet Union. So you could take your choice. You know, these ideas are only given credibility in college campuses. The work that we do at Turning Point USA, and anyone listening to this with kids or grandkids and nieces or nephews that want to get involved in the culture war fight, go to tpusa.com and please do so. We're fighting against the rising tide of socialism on these campuses in a very, I believe, a very effective and important way.
I know that we are limited with your time, so let me ask you one final question. Speaking of academia, for years it has attracted and continues to do so liberal professors who teach revisionist history and push the most liberal communist economists and philosophers. Why so left on college campuses?
Well, I mean, there's no accountability. I mean, these professors can theorize and put forth things that have no backing whatsoever and still get a credibility for it. And, I mean, look, college campuses have always been places where leftists are given protection and leftists are given, quite honestly, way too much credibility. But they're also not hardened by the external world. They're not hardened by the business atmosphere. They're not hardened by any of that. College campuses exist outside of the real world. They create these little enclaves where you can theorize and intellectualize and get rewarded for that. So then they find these radical, silly ideas that end up actually having really dangerous implications for society at large.
Well, you have been at CPAC recently, earlier this year, and that was where Deneen Borelli also said that the left is trying to out-left each other. Is there a reason for that in your estimation?
Well, yeah, I mean, because the left has never found they don't have principle, so therefore they always are trying to progress to the inevitable jumping off the cliff. They're always trying to create utopia, which is impossible to do so. We as conservatives, we have principle, we have truth, we have things we can point to. For example, we want to have a nuclear family. What a concept that is, right? Mm. We want a nuclear family. Nuclear family is a foundational unit, is a foundational backbone of a functioning civil society. The left wants to destroy the family unit. What do we want to replace it with? Well, they can't answer that question. Either it might be government, it might be some form of government programs. The left is all about deconstruction. That's why they want to out-left each other. Every listener to this has to understand and look up deconstructionism. It is a philosophical school of thought that is embedded in the left. They want to tear down our society, and they don't want to build it up to anything else. The left has never built anything of value. Think about it. What has the left ever built? They've destroyed the Boy Scouts. They've destroyed Hollywood. They've destroyed music. They've destroyed comedy. They've destroyed ESPN and sports. They've destroyed everything they touch. And that is the left. They are a force. They are a corrosive force that must be stopped because they don't stand for anything constructive. And they've been way too good at it over the last couple of years. And, at Turning Point USA, we're trying to fight back against it every single day.
Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA has been my excellent guest today. Charlie, thank you for the work that you're doing across academia.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate your efforts. Well, I want to read a quote from you for you right now, because often the terms communism and socialism are used interchangeably. And a pundit once told me wisely that communism is where socialism goes to die. The writer Ayn Rand said once, "There is no difference between communism and socialism except in the means of achieving the same ultimate end. Communism proposes to enslave men by force, socialism by vote. It is merely the difference between murder and suicide, apt now more than ever before, perhaps only more apt 100 years ago during the Bolshevik revolution. Margaret Thatcher herself said, "The problem with socialism is that at some point we run out of other people's money." Well, I will tell you, after talking to Charlie Kirk, I am encouraged by the wisdom coming out of millennials, who are often not as publicized as their far-left counterparts. The fact that Sebastian Gorka, once aide to President Trump, his deputy assistant, says that socialism endangers the world, and warned that socialism's encroachment on the United States is a bigger threat, comes specifically from an individual who himself understands what that is like. He came from the Eastern Bloc. His father was tortured by communists. He survived the regime. And indeed, individuals who have experienced communism or socialism, stronger, uglier sister, have much to say about what a danger it is to the United States. And let me remind you that Karl Marx, who is the father of communism, had a theory called commodity fetishes, that individuals who were in capitalist societies pursued things like jobs, like relationships, like cars, like homes that had no intrinsic value. But let me remind you as well that Friedrich Engels, his very close capitalist friend, covered Karl Marx's debts by paying for all of them, and indeed paid for the cost of publishing his Communist Manifesto. So yes, in the end, capitalism paid for communism. We have hope that our voters in this election season will vote in the nature of freedom. And as we have passed the 75th anniversary of D-Day, where individuals unified in favor of one truth without identity, but rather ideal, and that is freedom, put their lives and their livelihoods and their youth on the line in an opportunity to keep a free nation free. May we take an understanding of what those men sacrificed on D-Day. May we take it forward and understand that America must not ever be a socialist nation. You have been listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Go to tonyperkins.com for more resources and information on the guests that you've heard today. tonyperkins.com. We will talk to you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.